Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go. It's Tuesday, and I hope everybody had a blessed Thanksgiving. I know the turkey's behind us now. Now we focus on Santa Claus and Christmas, and man, the year goes by quick. But this is the American Sports History Podcast, hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend to me, Peter Ray, live in Cleveland. Yours truly, Mark Mancini in Los Angeles. We're kind of busting out the sweatshirts now. The temperature's dropped a little. Nothing like Pittsburgh weather, but it is for what it is. If you happen to miss this show, catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports Podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcast, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, more of him, less of me. As I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in place, hand off the mic, Peter, the threes. How are you? How can people get a hold of you? And man, oh man, you're bringing a legend in this show today, as you always do on your shows, my friend.
Hi, Mark. I'm doing well. I have a YouTube channel. It's my name, Peter J. Rea. You're absolutely right. Tonight's guest played Major League Baseball and Pro Baseball from 1999 to 2009 with the Tampa Bay Devil Rays, Anaheim Angels, Texas Rangers, the Hyundai Unicorns in South Korea, the Unit President 7-Eleven Lions in Taiwan. He was an MLB coach from 2013 to 2020 with the Cleveland Indians and LA Angels, New York Mets manager in 2018 and 2019. He managed in Mexico in 2021 and 2022 for the Acereros de Monclova. And he won a World Series in 2002 with the Anaheim Angels. He won a championship in Taiwan in 2009. And he won an American League championship as pitching coach for the Cleveland Indians in 2016 and got the Indians to Game 7 with the Cubs for the World Series. Welcome to the show, Mr. Mickey Callaway.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Peter and Mark. I really appreciate it. I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, wow. What an honor having you on. What a career you've had. First of all, would you like to give us an overall of your life in baseball?
Yeah, you know, it kind of all came back to me when you were talking a little bit about where I've been. And that's probably been the most special thing to me, is to be able to travel all over this world playing the best game in the world. You know, I've been to so many different countries. I've played winter ball, you know, in Venezuela, Puerto Rico. I've been over to Asia. I get to do spring training in Japan, and played in Korea and Taiwan, as you mentioned. But this game of baseball is a worldwide sport, and it's that way because it's one of the greatest sports that we know. You know, not only is it our pastime, but it's really becoming other countries' pastimes as well. I mean, they go crazy for it in Japan and Korea, Taiwan, and it's just great to see how far our sport has come.
You were on the Anaheim Angels in 2002 when they won the World Series, so that's an incredible thing. Do you want to talk about your experience for the 2002 World Series champions, Anaheim Angels?
Yeah, that was a great experience for me. I had gotten traded over from the Tampa Bay Rays, which was my original team that I got drafted by in the offseason. And, I think a great story about that season for me is I'm coming over from Tampa Bay. We weren't very good. The Anaheim Angels the year before didn't really succeed that well. And I'm in spring training there. You know, I don't really know anybody. It's the first day. And Mike Socha is talking about winning the World Series. And, you know, I'd never been around any discussion like that. You know, coming from the Rays, we were just trying to win a game or two at that point in time, because we were such a new organization. You know, and obviously everybody has high expectations in spring training, but when you go and hear, you know, your manager, you know, especially a manager like Mike Socha, start talking about winning the World Series and climbing every rung along the way to get to the World Series is very motivating. And that was the focus in that organization from day one. You know, I spent most of the season in AAA there that year. And we had some great contributors to the major league team in AAA. We had John Lackey there. We had K-Rod was there. We had Donnelly was there, Scott Shields, myself, and all of us ended up going up and helping out, especially right at the end. I think I made six starts or something at the end. But it all came down to Mike Socia being the leader, really saying, hey, from day one, our goal is to win a World Series. We're not here just to try and have a winning record, you know, things like that. We're going to win a World Series. And what a special World Series that was in my mind, you know, just watching Bonds and being able to sit in the dugout. You know, I wasn't on the active roster. I was just there in case somebody got hurt and I could get activated. I was our fifth starter at the end of the season. So in between, you know, we won our series pretty quickly. We had a little bit of a layoff. So I remember going out there in practice and trying to keep our hitters kind of fresh by pitching to them. I think I threw like 90 pitches in a row without a break. Just so, you know, that was my contribution to the World Series, was trying to keep some of those guys ready, keep Tim Sam and those guys ready. But what a great series that was. You know, I think we intentionally pitched to Bonds like four times and he hit four homers. I loved every bit of that World Series. That was a great time. You know, I got traded over at the right time.
In 2009, you won a pro baseball championship in Taiwan for the Uni-President 7-Eleven Lions. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, so I actually wasn't there for the end of the season. I pitched the last game of the first half, and they play two halves to go to the playoffs, and I pitched the last game of the first half to clinch a spot in the playoffs. And then I hurt my shoulder, and I ended up going back home. But that was a really good team we had. Yeah, that was fun baseball there in Taiwan. I think my favorite story from my time in Taiwan was I had started throwing a knuckleball kind of late in my career, just as a fourth pitch, just to kind of keep the hitters off balance. But I was having some shoulder issues that season, early in the season, and I haven't played catch in 12 days. I was kind of on the DL at the time. Our starter got hurt the day before he was supposed to pitch. And like I said, I hadn't picked up a ball in 12 days. And I said, you know what, guys, why don't you activate me? I'll go out there and throw all knuckleballs. And I went out there and threw all knuckleballs. I had a perfect game going through four innings. And then my finger started hurt. I think I gave up like six runs in the fifth inning or something. But I remember that game like it was yesterday. And that was one of the things I was proud of. It was awesome. You know, it was just fun to be able to do that for the team and go out there and try to pick them up when we were in a little bit of a desperate situation. But great baseball in Taiwan. I had a wonderful, wonderful time there. Wonderful experience.
In 2016, you were the pitching coach for the Cleveland Indians under Terry Francona, one of the greatest managers of all time, and you guys won the American League championship and pushed the Chicago Cubs to seven games. You were the noble opponent when the longest title drought in American pro sports history ended 108 years. Do you want to talk about your experience with the 2016 American League champions, Cleveland Indians?
Yeah, that was definitely a unique experience for us going into those playoffs, because we had, you know, kind of a half of a starting pitching staff at the time. You know, Trevor Bauer hurt his finger with the drone, of course. We all know that story. So we were missing him. We had some other guys that were hurt. So we were down. I think Josh Tomlin was our third starter going into the playoffs. And he was unbelievable. And I want to say some of that might have been a blessing in disguise for us to get as far as we got, because Josh Tomlin pitched better than I've ever seen him pitch in those playoffs. And, of course, we had Corey Kluber. We had a great bullpen, Brian Shaw and Miller and Allen and those guys. But, you know, going into that playoffs that season was really tough to make some decisions, because we were like, okay, we got these guys hurt in our starting rotation. Who do we need to keep and who needs to go out there win? How are we going to set this up where we have the best chance to win? with limited starters. You know, I don't know if you remember, we had, I think Ryan Merritt threw a great game for us against Toronto to advance, you know, and he's a little lefty that probably had a few games in the big leagues. So we had our hands full, and the guys that we needed to stepped up. And I think you see that a lot with playoff teams because everybody has injuries during the season. If you have protection like the Anaheim Angels did with Lackey and Scott Shields and K-Rod and those guys and Brendan Donnelly coming up from the minor leagues and filling in and doing a great job, then you can survive and get into the playoffs and continue to have some success. And we kind of did that in Cleveland that year as well. So you got to have depth because you're going to use 11 starters on average during a season. If you don't have, you know, 5 to 6 other starters that are capable of coming up and making some decent starts to keep you where you need to be, then you're going to really struggle.
You started off as a player in MLB in 1999 with the Tampa Bay Rays. What do you remember about Larry Rothschild, the manager?
Yeah, he was great. You know, obviously, he was one of the reasons that I wanted to be a manager in the first place is because, you know, he was obviously a great pitching coach and turned manager, you know, and I had Buddy Black in Anaheim that year in 2002 that also became a manager. So, you know, right away, you know, early in my career, I was even thinking, hey, look, I'm not a very good pitcher. I'm going to be a better coach in the long run and maybe a manager one day because I see these guys doing that that were ex-pitchers. So I had a really good relationship with Brian Price, who ended up managing in Cincinnati. So those guys were really, you know, kind of role models of mine that kind of made me think, hey, maybe one day I can go up there and manage at the major league level as well. But I was very fortunate to have the coaches that I had in my limited time playing in the major leagues. Like, I got to play for Mike Socia. We had Ron Renicki on our staff. We had Joe Madden on our staff. We had Buck Showalter, I played for in Texas. Oral Hershiser was my pitching coach. I was fortunate to get to play for some very good managers and coaches along the way. And, you know, I really looked up to those guys and I thought, man, I think I'd really like to be a coach one day.
Okay. Some of your teammates from the 99 Tampa Bay Rays, Fred McGriff.
Yes. We had a loaded roster. You know, we were just a little bit older. We had Fred McGriff. We had Jose Canseco, Wade Boggs, Davey Martinez. I mean, you name it. We had some great players on that team. It was fun to be around those guys. We had Bobby Witt, Norm Charlton, you know, Joe Oliver. It was a very, very good team to be on as a young rookie, and those guys really took me under their wing, and they didn't need to at all, and really showed me the way and said, hey, this is how you do it, this is what you don't do, this is what you do. And it was great to play with guys like that.
Any memories of Wade Boggs?
Yeah, so Wade Boggs, you know, he is an interesting character. You know, I loved obviously watching him hit. I got to be there for his 3,000th hit, which was a home run. And I still have a bottle of champagne from that day in my little room at home. But he would always come by me and he chewed tobacco and he would put these huge things of tobacco in his mouth and his fingers would be all dirty. And I'd be sitting in the dugout not pitching that day. And he'd come by me and I had to have my stark white pants on, and he would run his fingers all the way down my pants, and I'd have 3 black marks running down my pants. So, you know, he was a great guy, too. I mean, another guy that, you know, he could have walked by me on the bench and never said anything, but it was always talking to me, and he was a great guy, obviously, to be around as well.
How about Jose Canseco?
Jose, I tell you what, that guy was a specimen, and his focus at the plate was unbelievable. I love being around him as well. Another guy that just took guys under their wing. You know, I didn't see that as much when I was coaching, those older players taking the youngest guys on the team under their wing as much. But I was fortunate enough to play in an era where that was a big thing. And Canseco did that as well. But I remember, I guess, with Jose, my fondest memory of him is he was at the plate, and he hit a – we were in Toronto, and he hit a ball that got about 6 feet off the ground, and it hit the top of the fence in the outfield, and he ended up getting a double. And then I see him out there on second base, and he's kind of making a swinging motion like they teach how to swing today. Like, I got to get under that ball a little bit more to get it out of the park, you know, kind of leverage it a little more. And I thought that was really funny because, I mean, he just laced one and hit it about as good as you could possibly hit it the way you're supposed to, and it just didn't go out, and he wasn't very happy about it. But that was a good memory of him. And another memory, I guess I was pitching, and we had a little mix-up. I think he was playing left field at the time, and there was a little bit of a mix-up in left. And I guess, was this Toronto as well? It might have been. But the ball bounced on the turf in fair territory, like right behind third base, and he probably should have caught it. But it spun into the stands. I'd never seen that before, a fair ball bouncing in fair territory and then going into the stands because he probably misplayed a little bit. But it was those are the two memories that stand out the most, probably with Jose.
Paul Sorrento.
Oh, wow. You know, I got to coach with Paulie in Anaheim, and talk about salt of the earth. This guy is one of the best guys, most laid-back guys to be around. Obviously a beautiful, beautiful swing. I have a little story about Paulie. So Fred McGriff was at the plate, and he hits a single. Or maybe he hit a double. I think it was a double. And I'm sitting on the bench, and Larry Rothschild looks at me and goes, "Hey, you're running." And so I ended up pinch running for Fred McGriff. I was on first base. I'm sorry. I was on first base. Larry Rothschild says, "Hey, you're pinch running." So I go out to first base. I hadn't run since high school on the bases. And we were playing the Seattle Mariners. Paulie was on deck. Somebody hits a single to left field. Mike Cameron's playing left. And I come running around second base, and I ran. I kind of rounded the base kind of hard. I mean, at first, it was kind of down the line a little bit. So I was thinking, oh, man, I'm going first to third. You know, I could run a little bit. I'm going to go first to third on Mike Cameron, which was a big mistake because Mike Cameron came up, acted like he was going to throw the ball to third, and back picked me from second base as I made the turn and picked me off. I was safe. If we had replay, I was safe, I promise you. But they called me out, and so I'm kind of trotting back by, and I kind of go in the front end of the dugout there in Seattle, and Paulie's kind of still like, what the hell? So I looked at him and said, "Sorry, Paulie. You know, I might have taken an RBI away from you." But and then I go inside, and Fred McGriff's on the training table, and I walk up, and he's laughing his ass off at me getting picked off a second. He's like, "I could have done that." So that was the end of my pinch running attempts for my career. But that was kind of a funny thing. Oh, wow. But he's the weatherman. Buck Showalter, when we played together in Texas, he, I guess, got his degree in meteorology when he was in college, and he was basically a weatherman. So anytime Buck was worried about the weather, he'd go to Herbert Perry. But I tell you what, I played with Herbert in AAA and in the big leagues, and that a professional hitter all the way. You know, everything you want in a swing, stayed up the middle, great soft-spoken guy. This is great you're bringing up some of these names. I love kind of reminiscing about these guys and my ex-teammates. But another wonderful guy. I mean, you know, these guys that get to the big leagues, they get there for a reason because they know what they do and they know how to do it, and they're wonderful people.
Jose Guillen.
Jose Guillen. So I was fortunate enough, I don't know if you guys remember this, we were playing, I was in AAA, Jose Guillen is down on rehab, and we're playing in Louisville, I believe it was. We were with the Durham Bulls, and Jose Guillen is batting, and he breaks his bat, and pretty much the whole barrel goes out past the pitcher's mound. And the ball is in play. It's a fair ball. Well, Jose Guillen does not run to first base, but he runs out to get his bat that's behind the mound when the ball's put in play. And so everybody's like, what the heck is going on right now? What is Jose doing? Well, he went out there and grabbed it. The umpires were like, wait a minute, what's going on here? I think the other manager's like, hey, wait a minute, what is going on? So they check his bat, and he got caught corking his bat that year in AAA on a major league rehab assignment. So I got to witness that. But I tell you what, this guy, he could really play. Best arm I've ever seen in the outfield, and can really drive the ball, you know, even when the bat wasn't corked.
Julio Franco.
Julio, my boy Julio. I got to coach with him in Monclova. You know, you mentioned I coached in Mexico. He was the hitting coach there when I was managing. You know, obviously we got to play together in AAA and a little bit in the big leagues with Tampa. I mean, this guy can still hit in the major leagues today. There's no doubt about it. He's just a freak of nature, and he still looks like he's 30 years old. But he's doing great things coaching. You know, he's kind of been all over coaching. I'm surprised he's not a hitting coach in the big leagues, to be honest with you, because he does a great job of doing that. You know, he ended up I think they ended up letting him go about halfway through the season. He went to be the GM in Tabasco for a while, which is where I think I'm going to end up coaching this next summer. I think I'm going to be in Tabasco. As kind of a assistant to the president, and then I'm going to be on the coaching staff to kind of oversee everything and kind of help with the pitching and help the manager and kind of do whatever I need to do for the team to help have some success. But Julio is still doing his thing and can still hit. I got to watch him take BP 2 years ago, and it was pretty impressive.
Bobby Witt.
Bobby Witt is one of the guys that took me under his wing the most. You know, I got to see him a little bit. He's doing some agent stuff, or was at the time when I was coaching in the big leagues. And, you know, I'll never forget Bobby. He really, really helped me. You know, from day one when I got on that plane, he really helped me out, you know. And he's also guilty of hazing me when I was a rookie. You know, can't do that anymore. It's kind of not accepted anymore. But when I was my suit out of my locker, my nice suit, crumbled it up, put it in a bag, and took it gave me this little tube top dress. And I had to wear this little tube top dress on a flight. And the bad thing, and this was Bobby Witt doing this, I know it was. him and Terrell Wade were the ringleaders of this. But so I had to wear this little tube top dress on our freezing cold plane. And the bad thing about it was we were going from Tampa to Seattle, so it was the longest flight you could possibly get in the major leagues. And by the fifth hour, I was kind of not in a good mood anymore. It was fun. It was all fun at the beginning when people were laughing, but at the end, it wasn't so fun for me anymore when I was freezing. But another great person and somebody I always looked up to because of the way he treated me.
One of my favorite baseball movies is The Rookie, and just a tremendous, tremendous movie. And Jim Morris, your teammate, that was the year he got called up. Were you there when he got called up?
I was with him in AAA, and I was with him in the big leagues. We both got called up around the same time. And, you know, watching that movie was kind of fun. You know, they took some liberties. Like, they show him waiting in line for a telephone call at a telephone booth. And we all had cell phones at that time, but they took some liberties. But overall, it was pretty accurate. I'll tell you what, he was throwing 97, 98. With a pretty decent slider, and that was just a really good feel good story, a really down to earth guy, and what a story that was. You know, you don't see things like that. So that was fun to be a part of.
What else do you remember about Jim Morris?
I just remember how quiet he was, you know, and he just kind of soaked everything in. Was very businesslike. Went out there to pitch. When he got the ball, and he did a great job for us in AAA and pitched really well in the big leagues when he got up there.
Okay, 2001 Devil Rays, Larry Rothschild looks like he got fired during the year, and you had one of the best – I was a big fan in the 70s as a boy, and you had one of the best players from the 70s as your manager, Hal McCray.
I did, yeah. Hal was great. You know, I was only up 2001 when I was up there. I think I was only up there for a week in the middle of the season. So I didn't get to know Hal that well, but there, this is kind of a funny story about Hal. And at the time, it didn't make me feel very good, but after being a major league manager, I could totally see how this can happen. So I went up in the middle of the season, and I was there for a week. I think I got in two games and pitched like five innings. I was just kind of a mop-up guy. But I went back down to AAA, and anyway, in 2001, I ended up being in AAA. I ended up being the AAA Pitcher of the Year for the team, and I didn't get called up in September. So I had to go in September to collect my AAA Pitcher of the Year award at a major league game, and I was in the dugout before the game, and waiting to go out there, and Hal was, of course, you know, congratulating everybody, and he came up and introduced himself, and evidently he forgot that I had been on the team for some time, because he kind of introduced himself like, "Hey, I'm Hal McCray. What's your name? It's nice to meet you." And I was like, "Yeah, okay, yeah, I was here for a week, but now, you know, at the time I was kind of like, oh man, this is terrible. But now after being a major league manager, when you're running through guys and you're busy, I can totally see how that could possibly happen, you know, if a guy comes up for just a few games.
Now some of your teammates, Aubrey, from that year, Aubrey Huff.
Yes, Aubrey ended up going and having a great major league career. And, you know, I think the thing that was the most impressive about Aubrey is from the first time I saw him hit in the minor leagues to the last game he played in the big leagues, he took the hardest swing I've ever seen every single time. And it was so impressive to me how Aubrey could go up there and put the ball in play swinging as hard as he did. You know, he was just a big, strong guy, and he put some monster swings on pitches. But I got to know Aubrey really well. I really, really enjoyed my time with him, and it was fun to watch him go out there and hit a baseball as far as he did.
We had comments from Joey from Bucks County, Pennsylvania, Darius from Clearwater, Florida, Gary from Pontiac, Michigan. Thank you so much for those comments. The time has flown by. Our guest has been Mr. Mickey Callaway, who was an MLB pitcher, coach, man, and manager. Won championships for the Angels in 2002 and in Taiwan and in Cleveland, American League pennant. We'd love to have you back again. Mr. Callaway, do you have any final words tonight for our audience?
No, I really appreciate you guys having me on. Wow, that did go really fast. I wish I could stay on here for another hour talking about this stuff. Thanks for letting me reminisce a little bit. And you know what? I really appreciate all the fans in baseball. This is the best sport in the world. And thank you for taking your time to join us tonight, because this is a special game, and to hear stories and to be able to tell stories, especially about this game, is always a pleasure for me.
Well, I'll definitely contact you again. I've written down a lot
Absolutely.
Of names here, a lot of names, and we haven't gotten very far. But Cleveland, I know Cleveland,
right.
Cleveland Indians fans will always be grateful to you and all the rest of the guys for 2016.
Yeah, that was such a special year. The fans, I mean, that was probably the loudest stadium I've ever been at when we were playing in the World Series in Cleveland. That was definitely a special time, special team.
So thanks so much, Mr. Mickey Callaway.
Absolutely.
Well, I'll contact you again. And next week we're going to have the starting center fielder and leadoff hitter for the coolest MLB team of all time, the Oakland A's from the early 1970s, Mr. Bill North. Dear listener, may the road rise to meet you. May the wind be your back. May the sun shine warm upon your face and rains fall soft upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you in the palm of his hand. Good night, everybody. Thanks again so much, Mr. Mickey Callaway.